Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's Monday, March 9th. We tell you everybody that because many of you are downloading this broadcast and listening to it. So it's Monday, March 9th. Good to have you with us. This broadcast, again, is created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals. And we're the proud recipient of the Progress in Lending Innovation Award. Very excited and honored to have that. We appreciate you joining us this week. And the hot topic segment, that's a big area of interest with a lot of people. Like one company said, if they haven't heard a rumor about mergers, if they're being bought or not, they started one by 9 o'clock because it was so anticipated that if they hadn't heard a rumor, they started one by 9 o'clock in the morning. So there's a lot of rumors in a lot of companies, whether or not they're being bought or sold. So we're going to be talking about mergers and acquisitions. And we're bringing on one of the nation's foremost authorities on that topic. And he just happens to be a good friend and a business partner. So glad to have Chuck Klein of Mortgage Banking Solutions, who is, without question, one of the nation's foremost authorities. I am experts on the area of M&A, mergers and acquisitions. So we're excited about having him here. We'll be working with him on that. Very, very special thank you goes out to United Guaranty. Are you aware that they are the number, or they are now for the fourth year in a row, the MI industry, mortgage insurance industry leader for the fourth year in a row? Congratulations on doing a great job, United Guaranty. I want to talk briefly about the MI comparing it to FHA insurance. Here's some things you need to consider when you're considering an FHA loan. United Guaranty's pricing is more attractive than FHA's for most products and borrowers. FHA insurance premiums on new loans with an LTV greater than 90% cannot be canceled. FHA mortgage insurance premium could be as much as three times the cost of United Guaranty's MI over the life of the loan. United Guaranty can offer faster and less complicated closings because the company reduces the need for FHA appraisals. It's easier for a seller to meet the inspection requirements when you're dealing with United Guaranty and their program. United Guaranty offers more premium payment choices, including borrower paid, single paid, monthly paid, lender paid, all kinds of paid options you can get yourself set up for. I was listening to one of the Quicken Loans ads over the weekend, and they said, no MI, we take care of it for you. And I go, they're using United Guaranty. Anyway, for many of you who are not familiar with this, be sure to head out to their website, www.ugcorp.com, and look forward to talking with you and they're looking forward to talking to you, and get a hold of one of their account executives. They have got some of the greatest account executives I've run across, just knowledgeable, true professionals. Mortgage insurance underwritten by United Guaranty Residential Insurance Company. Thank you, UG, United Guaranty, for being a sponsor. Also, a special thank you goes out to Velma, which stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. They are so helpful. They're dedicated to helping you build stronger, more profitable relationships. And they have this wonderful set it and forget it auto campaign feature that makes them a real nice solution. And they can do custom campaigns on the fly. We use them for this radio broadcast. I encourage you to consider Velma. Go to Velma.com, VELMA.com, the nation's most affordable and powerful marketing platform that I have seen, and I use it as a result. Also, a special thank you goes to Alice, Joe, and Andy for all that they do to make this program so successful. We're the number one listen to podcast broadcast in the industry. Quick update on some upcoming MBA conferences that May 29th through the April 1st. We have the National Technology Conference in Orlando at the Hyatt Regency in Orlando. Also, we have April 13th to 14th, the State and Local Workshop, as well as the National Advocacy Conference that tags on right behind that. Both of those are at the Capitol Hilton in Washington, D.C. And then also May 3rd through the 6th, the Legal Issues and Regulatory Compliance Conference. I'm sure Alice will be a featured speaker there. I'm not sure if she is, but she should be. That's at the Sheraton Chicago and the Sheraton Hotel and Towers. May 17th through the 20th, we have the Secondary Marketing Secondary Conference in New York City. at the Marriott Marquis. Good to be with you. We're so excited to have you here. Now, Joe Farr is traveling. He's actually at a conference today, and he sends his greetings to all of you. As we say in Texas, he sends it to all y'all. That's a great expression I'd like to pick up. I've picked up since living here in Texas. So, I tell stories on Joe every once in a while. When he first came on, I said, Dave, I just got too thick of accent. I don't think I'll be good on the radio. Well, you know what? Everywhere he goes, they go, he is just loved. He gets the feedback. And so needless to say, it's been a success, and he recognizes everyone likes the way Joe talks. So let's take a look at what's going on. NBA quote line. I'm dialed into the service right now. No economic data coming out today, but we have the JOLTS, which stands for the Job Opening and Labor Turnover Survey. That report is released tomorrow at 10 a.m. We're going to be paying close attention to that because when you looked at last week, we had the first couple of days, the first 3 days last week where we had the jobs number, whether it's personal income, jobless claims, or the ADP employment change data. All of that was mixed last week. And then we had the big shocker that came out on Friday where we said the non-farm payroll numbers, and that was 295,000. We're projecting 240,000. So a big jump there, and we saw the market trade off heavy. I mean, bond prices shot down, mortgage rates shot up on Friday. So the JOLTS report is a more holistic, it's a broader perspective. We're going to be paying close attention to the JOLTS report tomorrow at 10 a.m. It could be a market mover. It's either going to confirm the Friday numbers that we saw with the non-farm payroll numbers, or it's going to confirm some of the mixed data. If that's the case, then we should see some correction in the market, hopefully. Again, that's my thoughts. The MBS quote line. We're hoping for that. Maybe it's wishful thinking. Also, we have two treasury auctions. We have a three-year treasury auction on Tuesday. We also have a 10-year treasury auction on Wednesday. We have the treasury auction on the 30-year bond on Thursday. So we'll be paying attention to the flow of money, because it does give us insights into what's going on in the rest of the markets. Of course, money flowing into the bond market should, in theory, drive mortgage rates down. Money flowing out and into the more riskier investments, the stock market and the like, it has a tendency to cause mortgage rates to go up. So we'll see. We'll take a look at that. Also, jobless claims, another weekly report. Jobless claims expected to come in at 300,000, and we'll take a look at that. Retail sales, both with auto sales and excluding auto sales, will be coming out on Thursday as well. PPI, the Producer Price Index, and Core PPI will be coming out on Friday. Lots of economic data, although it's overall, compared to the last couple of weeks, a much lighter calendar. So that's what we've got. That's my version of what Joe would normally give for a market update. He does a great job, and we miss him. We wish him safe travels, and look forward to having him back next week. All right, that's it. Let's go off to a quick ad break, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Again, March 9th, Monday, is the broadcast. Good to have you with us. Someone just texted me and said, Dave, you sound different. Where are you? And I said, yeah, I'm on my cell phone. I'm sitting in the Admiral's Club here in the Austin Airport. I'll be flying out this afternoon. So I was doing this broadcast from the second studio, which is the Admiral's Conference Room here. Admiral's Club Conference Room here at the Austin Airport. We've got Paul Mallow on the line. I always love it when Paul dives in, and I'm looking over here at his website. And, Paul, good to have you here on the broadcast. Lots of good news items, Dr. Mallow.
Doctor, I don't have a medical degree.
I know.
Wait a second. Let's back up a second. You're not an original Texan?
I'm not. Andy and Chuck are very tolerant of me. I get to put up that. Chuck's a true born and bred in Texas. And by the way, he's our special guest. And you always want to get information
right on
M&A. He's on, man.
You have
a good broadcast. In fact, I mean, if you put your hand up, I mean, let you ask a question in there if you want it.
What time does the M&A portion start?
It starts right after. It's going to actually start a little bit earlier because we've got the thing. So it'll be probably starting here in the next 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
Yeah, hang on in.
I'll
get a question. Check. Anyway, Paul, I'm looking at your website. Originations of interest-only loans held steady. What's going on there?
Yeah, as you know, we crunch a ton of data here at Inside Mortgage Finance and IMF News. You know, we crunched the fourth quarter data, and lo and behold, it turns out that PHH Mortgage is the largest IO lender in the nation. And that's actually sort of interesting because PHH doesn't.
It is.
They don't have a balance sheet. And the banks that do the IOs, they put them on their balance sheet. So we can only ascertain that essentially PHH is, you know, selling these things to who? The banks, because the banks love the yield on them. They're playing the old carry trade, so to speak, with it not being treasuries, but mortgages where, you know, there's so many banks that I think we talked about this recently where,
right,
you know, the banks are cost of funds at 25 basis points and the jumbos are yielding at least four. So it's a nice asset to put on your balance sheet. Why should banks do C&I loans? So, and the other big thing is, you know, everyone was afraid that, you know, IOs are not qualified mortgages. So people were afraid that the QM rule might stifle production of IOs, but that hasn't turned out to be the case. So that's our lead story today from Brandon Ivey. An interesting letter came out this morning from Community Home Lenders Association. This isn't to be confused with the other trade group of a similar name. And they basically want the Federal Housing Finance Agency to go really slow on their capital rule for non-bank servicers. And it's strange. I have to do more follow-up on this. But they mentioned in the release that some non-banks have actually been subjected to what they call additional regulatory requirements. We didn't get into too much detail, but we will later on. So something's afoot with that.
Yes.
That's obviously a big deal for the industry.
Who heads up that association, Paul? Who heads that
You know, I have his email. I was emailing him this morning. Hold on.
Yeah, I was just like,
who is it?
Is that Glenn Corso?
No, Glenn Corso's got a similar name. I think his is CMLA. His Scott Olson,
that's right.
I believe. That's who it is.
Scott
Olson.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm trying to keep them straight, and I have to do it by name, so that's good.
Right. So good idea. Also on the website today, we went over the mortgage employment numbers a little more closely. You know, basically, mortgage employment was flat in January. These are according to BLS numbers from out of the federal government. You know, it's funny with rates taking up the last couple of weeks. You know, people were pretty optimistic up until about a month ago. So you know, now they're starting to worry a little bit about what production is going to look like in the second half of the year. And also this morning, you know, you heard more about, you know, the Fed hikes rates by what, 25 basis points. You know, how bad is that going to hammer the market in the second half for not only mortgage lenders but, you know, realtors. So it's going to be interesting to watch. Also on the website, we went over J.P. Morgan's conference call, or I should say their investor, they had Investors Day last week. Kevin Waters was there, and he was basically saying, you know, that J.P. Morgan's going for higher quality mortgages, and they're making a big push into jumbos. They're already big in jumbos, but it seems like they're really focusing on jumbos. And, you know, was it back in the summer, I think Jamie Dimon was on that conference call beating up on the FHA, on FHA and FHA lending. So, you know, you wonder. I mean, basically J.P. Morgan Chase can, I guess, you know, afford to be choosy on their mortgage business, and they're doing fine. We crunched the HECM numbers. Interesting data point.
That's an interesting,
HECM lending, HECM lending spiked by 31% in the fourth quarter compared to the third. It was still down a bit for the year. But it's on the rebound, so we're going to keep a close eye on that. In the short take section, we have a report from Compass Point. They're basically telling investors to dump Walter Investment Management. Hardly bullish at all. They reduce earnings projections on the company. Also, Cerberus Mortgage Capital, they yanked plans to do an IPO for their MBS investing unit. Those IPO documents were filed in 2012, so they finally officially pulled the plug on it. And then there's a real short item about Collingwood. They just came out with a new survey saying there's a good chance that private capital will abandon the mortgage industry if Fannie and Freddie are not reformed. So that's all the good stuff for today.
Well, good stuff. We'd love to have you stay on and listen in and And love any thoughts. Shoot me an email or a text. And when in the middle of it, if you want to shoot some questions over to Chuck, but it should be real good to get an update. We're going to be focusing a little bit on that M&A section, Paul. We're going to be talking a little bit more about valuations, what's going into it, what are we seeing, valuations, what the trend lines are. That may be real interesting and something that you may want to quote.
Sure.
Just mention the broadcast when you go out there, when you did it. You heard it on Lickin' on Lane. Appreciate the extra. Hey, appreciate you dialing in. It's always good to have you. And hopefully you hear from me a little bit later on the broadcast during the M&A section. All right, folks. That's so good. Really, check out IMF News. It's a great website. And if you're not checking out, be sure to get over there, imfnews.com. You can get the automatic email that goes to your inbox every day. I have it coming in. It's one of the ones I read all the time. Paul's a great guy and truly is on top of what's happening in the market. So, all right, let's go over. Alice Alvey, unfortunately, had a death in the family. Our condolences go out to the family. It was an older individual, so I don't know how private they are about it, so I'm not going to mention who it is. But, you know, it was, I don't know if it was anticipated, but it was one that came where she cannot be here. So our condolences go out to the Alvey family and all what's going on there. So, again, an older individual, hate to see him go, but, yeah, that does happen. And the old ones are going, and we hate to see them go, but when they do, it does take us off of our game, and so Alice is not able to join us here today. So what we're going to do is we're going to run over to Sam Garcia and then head off to the Profit Doctor. Alice, go back and listen to the legislative update the last couple of weeks. She's given us some updates on things going on there. Also, just to give you a little idea of what we have coming up, Alice is going to be doing on the 23rd, I believe it is, Monday the 23rd, she'll be doing a broadcast about contract underwriting because it's really something we're starting to see as the ebbs and flows of volume happen. Alice, I've asked her to put together a broadcast on with some contract underwriters. It's in her wheelhouse more than anyone else's. And so we're going to have a broadcast on how to make variable costs, what are best practices as it relates to contract underwriting. So I think it'll be a very interesting broadcast. Bookmark that for March 23rd. All right. Well, let's get over and let's see here. Sam Garcia, I appreciate Sam always dialing in. He's got some great information. Sam, good to have you here. How's the weather up in Dallas? I'm flying over you here in about a couple hours. We're flying over you up to Chicago. What you got?
It's kind of overcast here, but still, that's a big improvement over what we had the last couple of weeks. I'll tell you that.
No kidding.
Well, listen, here's what we got going this week. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Let's go ahead and cover what you've got. I mean, you always have some great information. I always tell people to go check out your website because there's just some really good content. Again, www.mortgagedaily.com. And folks, we'll encourage you to get out there. It's a nice compliment to IMF News. So, Sam, give us a rundown of what's on your radar today.
Yeah, we followed those mortgage employment numbers each month, of course, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics put out mortgage employment for, I think it was January, and basically they were 282,000 jobs. That's down 6,000 jobs from December. So we saw a drop there kind of more than usual. We took those numbers, we inputted them in with some other market share statistics, and our data indicates that mortgage jobs, including jobs at banks and credit unions, mortgage jobs at banks and credit unions, was about 627,000 as of January. So that's where we are with mortgage jobs, a little bit of a blip this last time around. Last week, we put out our mortgage market index, which, of course, we produce with data from Optimal Blue. And basically, last week's activity was down 8% from the prior week, though still it was 13% better than a year earlier. Out front of the decline this last week were refinances, which were down 12%. Funny thing was that last week, even though the rest of the types of loan inquiries were down, inquiries for purchase financing were held up. They actually went up a tiny bit. So that was good to see that they held because that's kind of a more of a long-term indicator of where originations are going to be. we got a report out from Fortune magazine. They basically rate the best employers out there, and they do a survey with another company to come up with this information. On their, among all industries, Google ranked the highest. And what was interesting was that the highest ranking mortgage company was Quicken Loans. And I remember reading a couple of years ago that Quicken actually modeled their Detroit headquarters facility after a kind of a Google-style environment. So it seems like that's one of the things that's keeping the environment good over there is we've got the company following that kind of a model. They were the highest-ranking mortgage company and number 12 overall. There was a few other ones on there. If you want to read the story, you'll see all of the companies that are mortgage-related that made that list. The Mortgage Bankers Association put out its Mortgage Credit Availability Index last week. It was up 1% in February. That was a slight loosening over January. And out front of those particular improvements were jumbo loans, according to MBA's economist. But the thing is of course, while you know we did see a slight bit of easing, and the index came in this last time around, you know, much, much lower than it did back in 2006 when it would have been around 880. So, gosh, I don't know. I think it's like 10% of where it was at that point. So we got a long ways to go before we get anywhere near the credit conditions that were in place pre-crisis. Finally, we got some modification data reported by Hope Now. Basically, modification activity was down for the fourth year in a row. While there was
not surprisingly,
I think we've talked before about that. That's an indication of things. Conditions are getting better overall. You don't need so much government assistance as we had maybe in the past. But we saw that that Hope Now said there were a total of 36,600 modifications in December, and included in those were 10,700 HAMP transactions, down from more than 11,000 the month before. So, and that pretty much covers everything that we talked about for here today, David.
Good stuff. Yeah, good information. Excellent, excellent. Sam, thanks so much. Folks, check out the website again. Go to www.mortgagedaily.com. And get a hold of Sam at samgarcia@mortgagedaily.com or give him a call, 214-521-1300. Sam, thank you so much. Stay warm, stay
thank
dry
you.
Up there. I'll be looking from about 37,000 feet over here in a couple hours. Looking at you. So
I'll be looking for you.
Yeah, right. All right, man. There's just a few flights over there. All right, have a good one, and look forward to talking to you next week. All right.
Thanks, David. Bye.
All right. You bet. Well, it's always fun to have the Prophet Doctor on the radio, and we have him here with us again, and he's going to be joining me as we interview Chuck Klein on the M&A. But let's get his thoughts and wisdom, see what pearls he has for us. Prophet Doctor, what you have for us?
Hey, Dave. Well, you sound great, even though you are at the Admiral Club of the Austin Airport, and you have great internet service, too, so that's the good news.
Amazing.
Well, this week we are having our fourth in our accounting series webinar through the Mortgage Bankers Association. It's being presented this Thursday, and this is the culmination of the presentation. And on this week, we're going to be talking about the intricacies of hedge accounting. And so that's going to be a fun presentation for me to give and sometimes a frustrating presentation for people to hear, only because some of the stuff, just you got to turn your head sideways and go, what the? It's called the unintended consequences of GAAP. It's called the unintended consequences of GAAP. So let me give you a really quick example, if you don't mind, okay?
Yeah.
You're a business owner. I'm going to ask you, let's talk about, we own a mortgage company. And when we close a loan in our mortgage company, we collect origination fees. So we take those fees in, and we've got a commitment from someone to buy the loan and within a couple of weeks. And so, like if you're a big housing developer, you get to recognize income on the houses you build on a percentage of completion method, they call it. Whereas a house is getting ready to be sold, you can recognize the gain. So we got a mortgage, we got a buyer, we got a loan that's closed, it's an asset, we got a buyer to buy it, so we recognize that income, the gain. We set up an accrual for that because we want to have all of our revenue and expense in the same month because we closed the loan in February, so we want to have all of the revenue in February. We have our commission expense in February, so that way when you run your P&L everything makes sense. Well, you know, here's the funny thing. GAAP comes along and it says, you know, that origination fee income you collected when you closed the loan, we're not going to let you recognize that income. No, you got to defer that until the loan sold. And that gain on sale that you're going to make when you sell the loan because you got a buyer, nope, can't recognize that either. Got to defer that. And now here's the one. This is the one that makes everybody's head turn sideways and go, what the? We're going to make you, GAAP says, for all of your loans that are in your pipeline, so your potential loans, the loans that could, the applications that might become loans, when we lock a loan, we've got an expected gain we're going to make when we sell the loan. So when we have our pipeline, GAAP says, we want to know how much profit you've got built into your pipeline. So the loans that haven't closed yet, you have to put that money in your books. You have to recognize gain on loans that haven't closed, but you can't recognize gain on loans that have closed, just haven't been sold, and you can't recognize the fees on loans that have closed but haven't been sold yet. And so you go, I'm going to recognize the gain on my pipeline, but I can't recognize the gain on my loans that have closed. Yep, that's what generally accepted accounting principles implements. And the reason behind that is it's called an off-balance sheet financing facility with market risk. So an interest rate lock commitment that we give to a customer, that is a firm, formal, market-sensitive, rate subject to change value commitment that we've made to a customer. And since we made this formal commitment to a customer to give them specified rate and terms when they close the loan, that's considered a contractual obligation. It's an off-balance sheet financing facility with market risk because rates go up, rates go down. And so we have to take the value of our pipeline and put it on our books like we do our hedge as well. But anyway, we're going to talk all about the accounting details to make it so that when we submit our financial statements to the warehouse lenders, they're perfect GAAP. Because you have to. You have to submit GAAP financials to the warehouse line lenders because as a FDIC or OCC depository, they have to receive GAAP financials. So we're going to do our GAAP conversion from our – but anyway, why would you recognize money on loans that on applications? I mean, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense to me, but – that's GAAP. So we're going to talk about that and goodwill and MSR and earnout.
That's why it takes people like you to be able to interpret and understand all that and share that with us. And that's why we have you here. I'm glad to have you.
Well, one quick side note: we've been talking about the Federal Housing Authority's the FHFA on new capital standards,
right?
And they talk about tangible net worth, and they say in tangible net worth that tangible net worth means your capital less intangible items, like goodwill is an intangible item, mortgage servicing rights is an intangible item. Fannie Mae currently gives the exception for MSRs, but we're going to see how that fares out. But you know what? If you buy a company and you offer to the buyer an earnout where you're going to pay them money over time, you have to, under GAAP, consider that earnout as a liability, and you have to capitalize the amount of the expected payout. It gets discounted, but still, you got to create that liability. And you know what you do with the other side of it is you have to have a balanced journal entry, so you're going to create goodwill with an earnout liability. And you know what happens to goodwill in a mortgage company? It gets pulled out of capital.
So you got the liability in reality, but no offsetting asset. Interesting.
Well, and this is the unintended consequence of an M&A. I was with a company helping a company that was dealing with this, and I know Chuck's done a lot of companies with earnouts. There's GAAP, there's accounting considerations, there's unintended consequences, and then there's the reality of the market value of your company based on your future cash flows, and that's what we're going to hear all about Chuck talking about.
What a great segue into our hot topic here. Excellent, Andy. Thank you. Appreciate that. And with that, we're going to take a quick ad break, and we're going to have Chuck Klein on talking about M&A, the trends going on, what are valuations doing. You want to tune in. I suspect we're going to have Paul Mahler raising his hand because he's always trying to get to Chuck Klein. What's the latest? Give me a scoop. Give me it before anyone else has it. So anyway, it's good to have you with us, everyone. And again, this is March 9th, Monday. It's that broadcast. We're about ready to get into the hot topic segment, which has to do with M&A, and we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability.
With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals.
New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business,
please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900.
Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We'd like to introduce a good friend of mine, and Andy's, and better yet, he's even a business partner. Very fortunate to have Chuck Klein and Paul Mullo is saying they let you partner. They partner with you being a non-Texan. Well, there's this thing about Texas, folks. Man, if you ain't from here, you're not. But they let me in. I'm glad. I don't know. I'm learning the secret handshake yet. But Andy and Chuck, good to have you both on here. It's down to the three of us. We've had Alice dealing with family, loss of the family, and Joe's at a conference. So, Andy, you and I get to do what we get to do all the time, sitting chat with Chuck, and it's really good. So, Chuck, good to have you on the broadcast. I want to make sure you're there.
I'm here. Dave, thank you so much once again for having me. What a treat to be with you today.
It's always a pleasure. I always love getting the updates. And I'm getting emails from clients and from listeners already asking questions about that. And they go, I'm really interested in valuations. Hurry up, get to there. But I think we need to, first of all, I want to introduce people that do not know you, Chuck, as you're a 41-year veteran of the mortgage industry. You and I have been at it, started in 1973. Not together, but we got together, unfortunately, and very pleased to have you as a partner. And you have really specialized for years, both in loan servicing sales and M&A transactions, and you have done some of the largest transactions out there in the industry. And there's really a handful of you guys who really, really know this business. And I just want to start off by talking about the importance. And this may sound like it's a self-serving, but as an ad, but it's really meant to help people understand there's a real small group. Now, there's a lot of people who can talk M&A and most can spell it, but that's about as far as their knowledge goes. There's really a subset, Chuck, that really know this space. And I think that's so important. Then I want to get into trends. So give your thoughts on that. How many are there that really would consider true experts like yourself in the M&A space within the mortgage industry? Is it even five of you?
You know, Dave, I don't know that I can answer the question. There's probably several people who specialize in M&A. There's I'm going to say, a half dozen firms that I think are in it every single day. That's their primary source of business. And I'd like to say it's because we're specially talented, but I think it's just we're more patient than everybody else. These deals take a long time to do. I had a friend years ago who said it's a long gestation period, and they are very time consuming and take a lot of time, a lot of patience.
A lot of patience. Well, I think that is a key. And now that also is having, you're dealing with some of the most confidential matters during a transaction, and there's not a lot of people that can hold the confidence, that can handle the emotional ups and downs that the people go through when they're selling a business. So I think it takes a special personality type. And so I wasn't sure of the number, but I thought that was just interesting that in your thought is there's maybe a half a dozen companies in the whole nation that do this. And I'll tell you, if you want to work with one that doesn't know what they're doing, you'll find out quickly how much to appreciate someone who knows what they're doing in this area. Chuck, let's get in a little bit of what you see as far as trends going on, get an update. You were on the broadcast. I was looking at it. I thought it was more recent than that, but it was a year ago, Chuck. It's been that long. So I want to get an update and update our listeners on really what you see as the transaction. It seems like every time you turn around, there's another M&A transaction being announced. But how would you characterize this? Is this really growing exponentially, or is this just a part of a normal market business cycle?
Well, and first of all, Dave, I think I've been on sooner than more recently than a year. I think it was
okay, good.
Anyway, it's always good to be back. And and visiting with you and the audience. But, you know, I think that there's probably more M&A activity. Or when I say activity, you know, not necessarily deals getting closed, but discussions about potentially selling your mortgage company and buyers wanting to be involved in the space. And I think it's really been going on since about 2011. That's when we really saw the pickup. And I think there's a lot of discussions, and you know, and rightfully so, that you know, we always try to instruct our clients that you always, if you're going to be in a business, you need to have an exit strategy of some sort. It doesn't mean you need to sell today or tomorrow, but you need to be thinking about, you know, how am I going to get myself out of this business at some point. And most companies, Dave, as you know, mortgage companies were started, you know, by one or two individuals, and they probably had been very good loan producers, and they struck out on their own as loan brokers, and they grew into doing some correspondent lending, got a warehouse line, and grew. And you know, some of the companies we're seeing today that are interested in selling and really looking at that strategy are companies have been in business for 20 to 25 years, and there's a lot of them out there. The successful guys have been around a while. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a lot of new companies, but the real challenge today is the cost of entry is so high right now that in the old days you could start with hardly anything as a mortgage broker and migrate into a correspondent lender. But, you know, HUD prohibits that. You're going to have $1 million to $2.5 million net worth depending on when you decided to become a mortgage banker. So, it isn't cheap, and now that Fannie has raised their requirements, and Ginny, I hear, is thinking about going to $5 million. They haven't already gone to $5 million. So it's, you know, the typical loan officer can't start up a mortgage banking company today. They have to be more careful behind it. But back to your question, I believe that there's, you know, a significant amount of activity, but a lot more deals are getting discussed than actually getting closed, and there's a lot of rumors going around. And, you know, that you talked about earlier that, you need to be patient. Well, it's a very emotional transaction, and you're dealing with someone who created their company from scratch, and it's like it's their baby, and they created from nothing. It's grown. It's been a very profitable exercise for them. They've seen their personal net worth grow dramatically because of their ownership in the mortgage company. So, you know, we always, you know, try and advise our clients, as I said, to consider an exit strategy, just not today or tomorrow, but to look forward to, you know, how are you going to get out of the business at some point? How are you going to retire from this business? There's a lot of different strategies to be employed. So it needs to be done in every business at some point.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. You know, a lot of people get in the business, they have success, and then they go, how am I going to get out? I remember there was a client I had in Southern California before you and I partnered, and he was actually looking at trying to sell his business. And then he looked at all the options, and the option to shut down his business, it would cost him, I don't remember, to get all the leases and everything. It was millions and millions of dollars, and he really, for the first time, hit the panic button, and you can feel trapped. I got a great company. I want out. So I think that's significant. Excuse me. One of the questions I had is, are you seeing more buyers or sellers in the market today? Is there how do you see that changing at all? What has it been, and what do you see it going to?
Well, I think it's actually a pretty even match, Dave. I wouldn't say that it's more of one than the other. You know, a year and a half ago, I could honestly tell you there was more buyers than sellers. In fact, you know, definitely last year this time, there was a lot more buyers than there were sellers. And but we have to qualify when we say a buyer, that a lot of those were mortgage companies. And as we call them, strategic. They're looking to strategically grow their company for acquisitions. And although they have a good plan, most of them don't have the capital to acquire companies. And it's more than just going out and acquiring a company by paying someone for their net worth. And, you know, there was a time earlier last year when profits were down. People had felt the tail end of 2013 was a tough period of time, and then move into 2014, it was tougher until about May when volumes began to pick up. So there was a lot of pain during that period of time. And there were some companies saying, hey, I just need to sell. I've had enough of this, so I'm thinking about selling. Well, when the reality set in that, you know, I'm an owner of a mortgage company, and I've had a pretty good return on my little investment I made years ago, and I saw my company grow dramatically in 2011 and really grew in 2012, And we kind of stumbled in 2013. And, you know, the irony, Dave, is so many companies doubled and tripled their net worth during 2012. And that was, you know, probably a time we may never see again. And so substantial net worth had been built up. And owners began to realize that that net worth is at risk every single day in this business. So some said, well, maybe I need to take some of my net worth off the table. And depending on what your growth strategy was, that may or may not have been possible because, you know, your warehouse lenders can require some amount, as every lender knows. They want to see some amount of net worth to cover your warehouse covenants. So it's a challenge. And so a lot of owners began to say, maybe I need to have less risk today than I did. But the real challenge became that the buyers were saying, okay, well, we'll pay you net worth. We'll pay you the rest in the form of earnout. And I can tell you, Dave, that if I set, you know, 20 successful mortgage companies down in the room and I went through one by one by one and asked them, would they sell their company for their book value alone and, you know, take the rest of any type of premium above the net worth in an earnout? They'd say absolutely not. And the answer I get over and over and over again is, you know, that, you know, why would I let somebody else pay me for my company with my earnings? Well, you know, once again, the reality is it's always how they're paid. They're going to pay you with your earnings in the form of an earnout. It's always about the earnings, Dave, and I can't tell my sellers that enough, but your earnings have to be there. But, you know, most mortgage companies, and I say if I had 20 in the room, maybe one might have said, hey, I might consider that. But most successful companies are not going to sell their company for just for the net worth at closing and the rest in the form of earnings. So it has to be some kind of premium to make a transaction. And a lot of the mortgage companies, again, what we call strategics, did not have the capital or did not want to invest the capital when they weren't really sure what the earnings path was going to be. So back on your question, is there more buyers? So I think it's probably an equal match. But I certainly would not call this a seller's market or buyer's market. You know, if it's going to be a seller's market, it has to be a mismatch. There has to be, you know, more demand for my product than there is product on the market. And I don't really see that. I see the buyers still struggling, coming to grips with, you know, paying a higher premium at closing. But the good news is most of them are saying, we know we have to pay a premium at closing now, and it needs to be more if we're going to have a deal get done. But I don't call this a seller's market by any means. I think it can become that again. 2012 was a real seller's market, but I don't think it's that way today. I think we have a pretty even match of buyers and sellers, and
that's good.
Think a fair marketplace is being created.
Good. It's good. And there seems like, you know, there's more of a realistic expectation on the buyer's part that they're going to have to be a premium. That's encouraging to see that there's a good balance there. That's excellent. I want to get Andy in on it because Andy, the Profit Doctor, and you work closely together on mortgage company evaluation. And of all of the things, when we sent out the email that announcing that you're going to be on talking on this topic, and you were on more recently than a year ago. I forgot that other broadcast. Sorry, I found it in the list of all the broadcasts of the one year ago. I couldn't find the more recent one. But a lot of people are saying, Dave, we'd like to get an update on how are you calculating the value. What is the value that's realistic? Does it, you know, servicing is in there? So I'm going to actually turn the mic over to Andy and have him dive in on that aspect because the two of you team up in that area a lot.
Well, thanks, Dave. Hey, Chuck. Good to talk to you again today.
Hey, Andy.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending. Hey, I wanted to circle back and touch base on just one key point you made earlier, and that was when Dave was asking you the question, how many other people are there in the industry that know this as well as you do? Well, that was kind of a loaded question. That was a tough question, and you answered it perfectly. You go, well, you know, I really can't answer that. There's a lot of other qualified firms, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, when you're in a negotiation to sell a company or buy a company, and Chuck already said it's a very emotional time for all, and despite the fact that we've got all these analytical models that come up with values and so forth, it's still a lot of emotion. And one of the things that I've seen you do over and over and over, Chuck, is you have the ability to say the right thing at the right time, to hold
yeah,
the
so
deal
true.
Together, to know if the point that the attorneys are making for the modification to the letter of intent or the definitive agreement or just all of these conference calls you go through to negotiate the documents that are the underpinning for these transactions, knowing what's the right thing to include, the right thing to exclude, and say it in a way that the attorneys stop yelling at each other and hear the truth about this is just an amazing skill. And so I know you do that. I've seen it over and over and over. But do you have any quick points you want to make about that part of the deal, the LOI, the definitive agreement, the content, getting the right structure in a deal?
Yeah, it's a hard question, but as I said earlier on, Andy, it takes a lot of patience. And I think what you always have to look to is what are you trying to accomplish in the transaction? You know, what's the real goal here? It's not all about the money. I mean, it's not. And sometimes the highest price is not the best deal. In fact, often it is not the best deal. It's always about the culture and the alignment of cultures, the alignment of visions. And so getting the right parties together is hard. So the task is trying to keep, when you get the right parties and you really believe you have the right parties, is keeping them on task. You know, what were we trying to accomplish when we started down this path? And we talked about, you know, we think it's worth some multiple earnings and how are we going to pay those earnings out? And we got to kind of push the emotions aside. And, you know, it can be a roller coaster. I remember a deal we did many, many years ago, and it was incredible because the owners of the company would go out every Friday, and they had one of these gigantic cigarette boats, and they would take it out in the lake and go out and have a few cocktails. And at the end of Friday afternoon, they said, listen, the deal's off. We changed our mind. We're not going to do the deal. So they have a million different objections to the things raised. And by Sunday afternoon, after fighting all day Saturday and Sunday, by Sunday evening, we got the deal back on track. So I guess importantly, let's keep the alcohol out of it, first of all, guys. It's the emotion that you have a company you built, and you just have to really bring everybody back to the deal at hand. And it's not always easy. And, you know, there's some really smart guys in this business, and guys are a lot smarter than I am on both sides of the table. And they perceive things to be a certain way. And sometimes the perception gets a little out of hand, and they worry about risk. And, man, risk is important. I don't belittle that at all. It's awfully important. We always have to be conscious of it. But, you know, we have to keep the deal, you know, on the kind of the path we began down. What was our motive? What was our goal? And you always want to bring them back to that. Okay, well, this is where we started. Everybody settled down, and things were said that probably weren't really meant the way they were said. You take it the wrong way. Let's get back down, and what are we trying to accomplish, guys? And do you think it's the right deal? And if we can work out the dollars, pay them a little bit different, if we can get you to the same place, maybe it's a different path. And you have to be resourceful. You have to continue to be resourceful, and you think and think, and you pray a lot. I can tell you that. And you ask the Lord for wisdom and guidance and to give you clarity in trying to get everybody back together if it's the right transaction. And like I say, the challenge is always culture.
We've watched you work, and there's no question it seems like divine intervention to get some of these deals done. It takes that. Andy, before you go on evaluation, someone just texted me. Paul's got some comments that he texted me, and Paul Mala. But also on the emotional side, someone said, what are the emotions when we're going through this? I mean, does anyone going into a transaction just want to touch on this just for a few moments, not long, because I want to get back to valuation. When it comes to emotions, do people anticipate this going to be emotional? What sets us off, and how can they prepare so there's less of a more emotional roller coaster in that process? Real quickly to that point.
Wow. You know, that's a tough question. Nobody's ever prepared for it. You know, you try and prepare your clients and try and walk them down the path. And, you know, one thing we try and prepare them for very quickly is that it takes time. The transaction, you just expect a 6-month investment in time. And so you have to be prepared. And, you know, what wears people down too is a they're continually asking for more and more data. And they want to research, and there's due diligence that goes on, and you start digging, and questions are asked. And sometimes there's questions asked when it's viewed as critical, when it really isn't. It's just a question. People become defensive. And once again, you're trying to protect your baby and make your baby look as pretty as it is. And sometimes, you know, your baby's not pretty on certain days. And you always have to, I think the important thing is be true to yourself and be honest and look at yourself openly and try not to take everything. First of all, guys, it's a transaction. There's going to be emotion involved. It's a transaction, and it's going to take us a while. We have to be patient, you know, and do it on a day-by-day process, Dave, and that's the only way I can prepare my customers. And because you're never prepared for a request that's going to be asked, and things get upturned that we didn't expect. I mean, even owners find things with a company they didn't know about will pop up and do dealings. So it's a matter of taking the time.
It's a data request and the duration of the transaction that can and the things that get into it. That's a good response. All right, Andy,
I think it's the ugly baby syndrome. It's the people get really agitated when they think their company's worth $20 million and you tell them it's worth $4 million. And so the shock of the reality of value and the ugly baby syndrome, the UBS, that it's not what they thought it was going to be. Yeah, ugly baby syndrome.
I like that.
Because that's what Chuck does. Go ahead.
Well, sometimes your baby isn't even ugly. You know, you just think your baby's prettier than it really is, you know. And it's okay, guys. You know, it's all about earnings, you know. And if somebody pays you $20 million and you only earn $200,000 a year, that's not a very good earnings stream. But, you know, if you look at what a good return is and all the risk involved in mortgage banking and, you know, say, well, I'm willing to settle for a 20% return on investment, that's high. The highest mortgage companies do it. And that's where I always try to convince the investors that, hey, what kind of return can you get 20% off? So there's a lot of risk. But, you know, I think it's a matter of risk and reward. And what I try and prepare my sellers for is let's come to realistic value. This is what I think your company's worth. And it just depends on, you know, how we can structure transaction to get you your money over what period of time.
So let's go there a little bit deeper, Chuck. Then, like, we've got buyers who see incredible ROI in mortgage lending. We've got sellers who want to extract their capital. They're worried about the compliance cost or the regulatory uncertainty. They're personal guarantors on the warehouse lines, and they've got repurchase risk from all the loans that have been sold. So, you know, whatever. The sellers want to sell. The buyers want to buy. So we try to get the two people together, and you're getting together with a seller to tell them, okay, let's figure out what we can reasonably expect a purchaser to pay for your company. What are the things that you think about, look at off the top of your head, and then before the deep dive of due diligence, what's your kind of quick judge, rule of thumb, kind of what's a company worth?
Well, I think day in and day out, Andy, that mortgage companies are, you know, worth book value plus 2x earnings. And, you know, all the listeners can say, okay, well, that's what I'm worth. Well, I believe it, and I believe it's always that way. Now, sometimes it'll be worth 3x earnings. Some markets, 2012, we're approaching 3x earnings. It's just a matter of how it's paid. But the challenge is the consistency of earnings. Let me tell you guys that it's not easy when you have a 2012 that's a great year for you, and you come into 2013 and your earnings fell off by 75%. In 2014, they fell another 10%. It's kind of hard to sell a company in 2012 earnings when you have not made it in a normalized market. And to me, that's a tough challenge for these sellers to realize that 2012 was probably the best year you ever had. So the investors aren't stupid. You know, I believe when you work with a PE firm and a hedge fund, you better get your tool belt on, because they know their stuff. They understand investments, and they ask a lot of questions. They want to, you know, understand how you're going to get to your earnings. So if you want to project off 2012 earnings, you better have a good reason to get there. But I believe, to answer your question, Andy, that it's just a quick formula. You can consider the book value of your company less 2x earnings. Now, the challenge is, how do you pay that 2x earnings? And today, deals are getting done. You know, at the end of 2013, even the first quarter of 2014, it was hard to get anything above book value because nobody could substantiate earnings. So, you know, we're willing to pay you what you earn, but we're not willing to pay you more than what you earn. It was the buyer's perspective. And sellers were saying, well, I'm worth more than that. But I think today that if you have a company that has had come off a good 2014 and the earnings look pretty stable, and they're stable in the first quarter that we're moving to 2015, then you have, you know, a much better base to work off of. And so, you know, we've got several deals working right now where we're, you know, talking about book plus one times earnings at the closing table and possibly a little bit over one times earnings at the closing table. Now, here's another scenario. We've got a company who had a great 2012, 13 earnings actually improved in 13, and in 14 they improved again. So his comment was, I won't sell my company for less than book plus two times earnings at closing. And I said, great, I think we can do that. So, you know, our challenge now is to find the buyer that could do it. And I believe he has a great platform to present that to, because his earnings are so consistent. He's in one of the best markets in the U.S. as far as property values and growth. So he presents a very good case. Can everybody get that? No. No. And once again, we have to go back to your earnings. So look how consistent your earnings have been. And every single deal is different. You know, that every company is different, and they're not all the same. All you got to get from point A to point B, but you all do it differently. And so all these companies, you have to look at the company itself, what your earnings look like, what your future earnings look like, and what growth pattern are you on today, and what earnings pattern you are. How comfortable can we get with what your earnings are going to be going forward? Because once again, guys, it's all about earnings.
Yeah.
Paul has got to run here quickly, but I turned on his mic. Paul, you got a quick question for Chuck? I know you want to talk about some companies that might be out there. I'm not sure he'll fess up to that, but what you got?
I understand he can mention companies. Real quick question, though, Chuck. At what point in the talks do you walk away from the table? I mean, you mentioned it's an emotional thing. You know, at what point, you know, after a month or two and nothing's moving along, at what point does the seller say, that's it, I'm not dealing with this buyer? Can you give him some advice on that?
Well, it happens a lot, you know, you get terminated a lot quicker than that, Paul. But, you know, you normally reach an impasse where the seller just says, I'm not going to do it, and you walk away. Now, that could happen, you know, several months down the road or 6 months down the road. And, you know, I think you're aware of, you know, different deals we worked on. We worked on the deal and they end up blowing, a year and they end up blowing up. But I think, you know, when you reach an impasse and you cannot resolve it, and it's, you know, it's not necessarily always overpriced, but it's usually overpriced, and more importantly, when the price is going to get paid, that you cannot come to grips with the terms, and you cannot come to grips with value. And, you know, we try and solve as much of that up front and do as much due diligence on our side, so we have a good feel. But, you know, due diligence, you know, bears a lot of sins. And so things do come up, and even things the owners don't know about sometimes. But, it normally happens. You just say, listen, we're done. But it could be several weeks. But I don't remember every deal where, you know, we reached an impasse and we just didn't walk away. And I tell you, Paul, this is the toughest market I've worked in, and I've been doing this for a lot of years, as you know. And I really believe it's the hardest market. Now, a lot of deals do get done, but I'm going to tell you, I bet at least 50% of the deals we work on don't happen. And you can't come to grips with either value or liabilities is still a big piece of it, too. Repurchase indemnification, things like that.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul, for jumping in here. I know you got to run. I just had an email or a text message from one of the listeners say, 50%, is that a high trend or a low trend for the, you know, based on historical? That seems very high, 50% transactions.
It's very,
not getting
very high.
Down.
No, I'd like to say we run probably at 80% success ratio, so 50% is huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. It's so good to have you be a part. We need to have you back on a quarterly basis, just touch base and make this a regular part, because there's so much going on and there's so much interest in this, based especially when you look at the number of people that dialed in for this broadcast. It's pretty extraordinary. Good to have you with us, Chuck. Appreciate you so much. Listeners, we are going to be I'm on vacation next week. I'm putting together a broadcast that will have someone on here. We're waiting to get a confirmation. If that happens, then there will be a broadcast next week. It's possible that we may be unable to, because Alice is gone, Andy is gone, and Joe may be the only one left standing. And we're working on, Joe's working on getting a guest so he can do a broadcast next week.
Folks, good to have you with us. Be sure to tell others about the broadcast. We appreciate you being a part of it. Check out the past broadcast. Go back and go over that. Yes, Andy, yes.
Sorry, I wanted to, before you run the music, I wanted to mention one quick thing. If you're going to do an M&A, you need to get in touch with Chuck to help you walk through the path, and he's going
Absolutely.
To get you to be sure and get good attorneys like Troy Garris and the guys from Mitch Kiter, and get good CPAs in the mix as well, because this stuff is really complicated.
Yeah, and you want people in there that are contributing to the transaction in a positive way rather than being dissenting voices and just messing it up. It's really got to have, you got to have someone knows it. That's why it's only a handful of people in the nation that do this and do it well. Certainly Chuck is one of them. Folks, appreciate you being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you back here next week. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.